The treatment of heroes and their victims, the quiet acceptance of conquest and murder in the name of progress, is only one aspect of a certain approach to history in which the past is told from the point of view of governments, conquerors, and leaders. Thus writes our guest this week in one of the most controversial histories of the United States. Here to speak with that author is Talking History's Fred Nielsen.
Howard Zinn is not the typical historian. He believes that professors have obligations that should take them outside the classroom and library. While most historians preach the virtue of objectivity, Zinn freely acknowledges his biases, demanding that others acknowledge theirs. Few scholars have written with his clarity and passionate conviction. His book, A People's History of the United States, published 2 decades ago, has sold over 700,000 copies, making it one of the most widely read books by a professional historian. An audio version read by the actor Matt Damon appeared in 1999. Howard Zinn, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
Most historians claim to strive for objectivity. By contrast, you've written that you've lost all desire for objectivity, whether in living your life or writing history. Why is objectivity undesirable?
Well, first of all, I think objectivity is impossible, despite all the claims that many historians have to be objective. Well, for that matter, many newspapermen have to be objective. Almost anybody who describes an event claims to be objective, but it's impossible because when you're doing history, you're dealing with an infinite amount of data concerning the past. Inevitably, you must select out of that. You can't present it all. There's too much. And so in your selection, you are guided by what you think is important. And what you think is important is based on your philosophy, your social views. You know, one historian may think it's really important who wrote Andrew Jackson's second inaugural address, and I think it may be more important to talk about the My Lai massacre or to talk about Jackson's expulsion of the Indians from the Southeast. So I think objectivity is impossible because of the inevitability of selection, and I think it's undesirable because what I think you need to do is to focus on those things that happen in history that relates to problems that we have in the world today. And that means that you must, in a sense, take a stand as a historian, take a stand in the sense that you believe in certain values. You believe that war is wrong. You believe that economic equality is a desirable thing. You believe that racial injustice is wrong. And I think when you have values like that, yes, you're not being objective. It doesn't mean that you are going to lie, distort, but it does mean that you are going to focus on the kind of issues that relate to the values that you have. And that makes history important, and not just a matter of putting down data which go nowhere.
What prompted you to write The People's History of the United States?
Well, I suppose it's because I was reading in my studies when I was a graduate student at Columbia and getting my doctorate, reading the texts of history and finding that they omitted enormously important events, which my life, you might say, had persuaded me were really significant. By that I mean my life as a sort of growing up in a working class community, getting interested in the history of working people and of labor, and reading on my own and reading about the great labor struggles in American history, you know, which finally succeeded in winning the 8-hour day, and the great clashes between workers and employers and the government coming in on the side of the employers almost all the time. Now, these were very dramatic, important events, and I looked in my traditional history books for them. They weren't there. And so I've had the same kind of feeling about the history of black people in this country. Especially when I began teaching in the South My family and I moved south in 1956. I taught at a black women's college, Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia, for 7 years. I became involved in the Southern Civil Rights Movement and realized that the history of that movement really was being ignored to a large extent. Yes, a few very dramatic events were being reported, but so much was going on that simply was ignored. And then I looked into black history, looked into the history of black people in this country, and realized that so much of that history was not being told because our history books were being written, you know, mostly by white people from a white point of view, and black people were, you know, as Ralph Ellison put it in the title of his book, you know, invisible man. Black people were invisible. And I thought it important to make them visible. I had the same feeling about the history of Native Americans, how you learn history in school and you learn about the Custer's Last Stand, you learn a few things about the history of Native Americans, but you don't really learn anything about, for instance, the great Indian removal of the 1830s, when thousands and thousands of Indians who lived in the southeastern part of the United States, in Georgia and Alabama, the Cherokees and the Creeks and the Seminoles and so on, what we'll call the five civilized tribes, when they were driven out of their homes by the American army, Jackson and Van Buren as presidents, driven out, this something called the Trail of Tears, in which there's this great trek across to the Mississippi. 4,000 Indians died on that trek. All of that missing from the history books. So I wanted to write a book in which the history of the United States was told from points of view that had been ignored, from the point of view of black people, Native American people, working people, women. I even wanted to tell the story of American wars from the viewpoint of our enemies. Mm-hmm. In other words, tell a story, for instance, of the Mexican War from the standpoint of the Mexicans. That's something we don't get. We get the Alamo, and we get the triumphal stories of America winning its wars, including the Mexican War. But if you look at it from the standpoint of the Mexicans, it was a war instigated by the United States because the United States was covetous of the Mexican territory. In fact, the war ended with the United States taking almost half of Mexico, which is now the great southwestern part of the United States. So there was all of this that I thought was missing from traditional treatments of American history. And let me say just one more thing about that. I thought that the traditional look at American history, which looked at American history from the standpoint of our important people, the presidents, the founding fathers, the Supreme Court decisions, the acts of Congress, what that did was leaving out the actions of farmers and workers and black people, the struggles of ordinary people, that kind of history created a kind of passivity among its readers. It created the idea among all these young people studying history that history is made by important people. And I wanted to really get across the idea that ordinary people, when they organize and when they struggle for justice, play a very, very important part in our history.
Hence, an important word in the title is a people's history. It's not the leader's history. It's not Washington's or Lincoln's history.
Yes.
One of the words that turns up frequently in your people's history is the word control. And as I read the book, it seems to be a thread throughout. There are certainly aspects of control when writing about slavery. One might not be surprised at that. Mm. And yet, the word shows up at other places, too. In discussing the American Revolution, for example, you write that the Founding Fathers created, in your words, the most effective system of national control devised in modern times. Mm. And near the end, you write, the American system is the most ingenious system of control in world history. Could you elaborate on that, the theme of control in your book?
Yeah, it's interesting that you should pluck that out of various parts of my book, but you're right. That is an important theme in my book, and I suppose I emphasize that because we grow up sort of thinking that ours is a democratic country, that the people are in charge. I mean, that's what democracy is supposed to be, that it's a government, well, of, by, for the people. And in other countries, totalitarian countries, dictatorial countries, the people are controlled by the government and the army and so on. So we have this idea of this vast difference between these other countries where people are controlled and our country where people are in charge. And what I am saying as a result of looking at American history is that here, too, in this country, the people are not in charge. It is not a government of and by and for the people. The people who are in charge are the most powerful, the most wealthy people in the country. And it starts with the founding fathers when they set up a constitution that basically is set up for the purpose of maintaining order, maintaining control. The year before the founding fathers get together in Philadelphia in 1787, in the year 1786 in Massachusetts, there was a great rebellion of farmers, poor farmers, rebelling against the rich who control the legislature of Massachusetts and taxing them heavily and taking away their farms when they can't pay their taxes. This is the Shays Rebellion takes place in western Massachusetts. It's a very tumultuous event. Things, you might say, things are out of control. It's finally suppressed, but the founding fathers are very disturbed by it, very worried. They want to set up a new national government that will maintain control, that will prevent things like Shays' Rebellion from taking place. And that is a very powerful motive for them getting together in Philadelphia and setting up the Constitution. The idea of the Constitution, really, and remember, the founding fathers are mostly slave owners, merchants, people who hold bonds. They're the rich of the colonies. They worry about the rebellion of the poor. Now, they're very explicit about this. And so they set up a system of control. And it's a very sophisticated system of control because it's not like a totalitarian state, a military dictatorship, where you simply control people by force. You control people by giving them sort of tokens of democracy. You let them have some popular participation. You let them vote. You put in a Bill of Rights. Now, the Bill of Rights may not mean much to people who are poor, and the Bill of Rights may be violated again and again by the government, but still you have a Bill of Rights. You vote. You have all the symbols of participation and democracy, but essentially, throughout American history, the country is fundamentally controlled by the people with the most wealth and the most power.
Your People's History is one of the few books that I can think of by a professional historian to appear in a Hollywood movie. Mm. It's mentioned in Good Will Hunting. Mm. Do you know how that came about?
Well, I'd like to say it came about out of the spontaneous enthusiasm of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck for my book, I guess maybe part of it was that they were enthusiastic about my book, but it's also true that Matt Damon has been a friend of my family. His mother has been a friend of my, a very good friend of me and my wife for many, many years. They were our neighbors, and so we've known Matt Damon since he was 5 years old. He grew up next door, and his mother probably gave him a copy of The People's History when he was 10 years old, and then when he and Ben Affleck were in high school in Cambridge, their teacher used the People's History of the United States, and they obviously are fans of the book. And so when Fox Television was looking around for some stars to attach to a possible miniseries based on the People's History, well, it called upon them, having seen the line that they wrote in Good Will Hunting. A line that they put in, I guess, out of they wanted to say something nice about a people's history, which they thought was important in developing their thinking about the world. Mm-hmm. Their mention of book, with Matt Damon's recommendation of that book in the scene with Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, gave the book a certain boost.
Your book, as I've said, has sold hundreds of thousands of copies. It's now on the big screen, but of course, its main purpose is more serious than simply selling books or selling movie tickets. It seems to me that you're viewing history as a kind of moral enterprise, and I wonder, in closing, we have a minute or so left, what would you summarize as the purpose of history, or to put it another way, why write it, why read it, why learn it? What is it good for?
I think the importance of history is to give us perspective on things that are happening today, so that we aren't captive by what people in authority tell us. We have no way of checking up on them. The president will tell us we have to go to war for freedom, for democracy, for this, for that. If we have no history, if we don't know the history of our wars and the futility of those wars, if we don't know the lies and deceptions that accompanied wars, if we don't know that history, then we will simply become passive recipients of whatever people in authority tell us. If we don't know the history of black people in this country, we'll sort of blithely say, well, what are they excited about, and why must we do something special for them? You know, if we don't know the history of women's struggles in this country, you know, we might not take seriously the idea of sexual equality. Yeah, so the idea of history, I think, is to put present-day problems in perspective and to teach us things that will make us skeptical of words that come from above, that will give us a kind of independent set of facts, an independent source of knowledge against which we can test what is happening today and what is told to us today.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Zinn, for visiting with us.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
We've been listening to Howard Zinn, author of numerous books and essays, including A People's History of the United States.